This is Feroz Manji. I'm talking to Giuseppe Tommaso from Italy, who is the author of a very, very powerful book called The Anatomy of a Revolution. Giuseppe, you link the issue of environmental justice with democracy. And more specifically, you use the term deliberative democracy. What precisely do you mean by that?
Democracy, just to remember for everybody, democracy is the exercise of power by the people for the people. It's a Greek word. Today it's nice to remember this because Greek people are very attacked in this moment, and they see their democracy brutalized by the power of economics. Unfortunately, in our time, the only government we know are the government of the banks and financial sector that have expropriated the power of the people to control their life and future. In a word, we live in a system that attacks democracy to reproduce itself, because capitalism needs to attack the democracy to reproduce itself. The system is unable to preserve and guarantee democracy. This is what we analyze after 2 decades of neoliberalism system. Environmental justice is directly linked to democracy, because reaching environmental justice is the aim of every community. Environmental justice introduces elements of procedural justice, distributive justice, participative justice, capability justice, functioning justice. Through environmental justice, we analyze what brings to a bad distribution. Like we say before, what originates injustice. On those basis, to make justice, we have to expand the community of justice. The expansions of the community of justice has always been an historical goal of democracy. We know that the differences in the distribution depend on social injustice in terms, like I say before, of cultural, economical, and political aspect. So if you want to look for justice, we must study the structure, practice, rules, language, and law that mediate social relation. Deliberative democracy refers to the way decisions are made, but today democracy is based on a verticalistic system of decision making. Deliberative democracy should include bottom-up approaches and citizen participation. Rather than thinking the power, this is the point, we need to change the power. This is a big change. The transformation of power and conflicts are practice to guarantee ecological, environmental, and social justice. Transformation of power inspired by environmental justice builds on form of self-government able to guarantee citizen deliberation. So, procedural democracy doesn't work anymore, and the crisis of democracy is clear to everybody. Deliberative democracy includes and makes possible decision usually excluded by the power centralized in a few hands. The inefficiencies of procedural democracies make impossible the transformation through the current institutional framework. This institutional framework and forms of representation that we know today are not able to face the crisis, guaranteeing more democracy and ecological environmental justice. Finally, the deliberate democracy is the process through which we learn that we depend on the others and on the environment. But in the meantime, it is the process on which we learn to recognize and respect the others, including the future generation and what I call the not human nature. This is, in a few words, is what we think when we speak about deliberative democracy.
You make the point about the domination of international corporations and the financialization of capital as being one of the principal causes of the ecological and environmental crisis that we face. But can that dominance really be challenged only by an assertion of ethics or just nice notions about environmental justice?
First of all, I think that the point is not just the superpower of the financial world and corporation, but the point is the weakness of the institutional systems and the representative democracy that are unable to answer the crisis and to regulate and limit the power of corporations and banks, because we spend time talking about the multinational company, the financial world, but the problem that we have to face, that the analysis that we have to supply, should be focused on the weakness, I insist, of the institutional system. So we have to face our limits. Of course, history teaches us we don't change the world with notions, but we need to build a common point of view on which we build hegemony. Most importantly, no change happens without social conflict and without breaking the old rules. This is clear. Unfortunately, this is the way that the evolution of human beings proceeds. And we hope that politics and our point of view, our capacity to explain and to build a common point of view, better point of view for all human beings, for all the life in general, should be enough to change the situation. But history teaches us that the conflicts are the way that we go on and we change the situation, the actual situation.
Okay, well, in your book you write that changes in environmental policies will certainly not come from big corporations, supranational organizations, or academia. They can only come from movements of environmental justice, which are seriously questioning the development model. But which are these movements? Who are you referring to?
We are talking about the new subjectivities, movements, communities, social organization, NGO, independent research centers, local authorities, that were born in reaction to the expansion of the new frontier of neoliberalism in the last two decades. These plurality subjects are fighting against environmental injustice, for the ecological conversion of productive activities, for a fair trade, for a fair finance, for the defense of the agriculture, biodiversity. They are fighting against agribusiness. They are fighting and living for the defense of the commons, goods. They are fighting to improve our work condition and workplace. They are fighting to have a place of work, because we have a condition of incredible unemployment, for example, in Italy and in Europe now. So we are talking about soldiers that defend their territories and their resources against the big infrastructural and other mega projects like giant dams, incinerators. So that is what I call a society in movement. You see, there is a great change also in the framework of movements, if we talk in that way. So the crisis doesn't affect only institutional forms. The crisis affects also movements. I mean, we cannot oppose to this crisis the same way to do movements that we had in the past. So we don't need movements that guides humanity on the solution. No, we need a society in movement. We need movement that spread themselves in a society and that are able to practice the alternative and the changing. This is the reason because me, like other, like Raul Zibecki in Uruguay, prefer to talk about society in movement.
So you describe these movements as been characterized by openness, plurality, and inclusiveness. Now, those are wonderful aspirations, but isn't that a slightly romanticized views of what, in practice, these movements are like?
I confess you that there is nothing of romantic in this, because plurality and deliberative democracy are the practice of environmental justice. And because we are admitting our imperfection, talking of the need of plurality. I mean, we refuse universality, monistic perspective, because life excludes this possibility. I mean, if we learn from life itself, we are able to improve our life conditions and our lifestyle. In the book, for example, in the last chapters, when I talk about a sustainable future, I face the issue of movement's limits. Because we have limits, and because, like I said before, we are part of the crisis. In the last chapter, when I talk about the new paradigm, I face the question pluralism and inclusiveness, starting from the universalism approach of the current model that imagine only an immutable human and the planet as something mechanical without life. So our answer to mechanicistic point of view is plurality, is inclusiveness, like nature and life teach us.
The whole issue of the environment, about climate change, etc., become very popular. There are many, many books being published today which address this subject. What would you say are the key issues which distinguishes your book from the majority of books that are being published on this subject?
Because I think it's a question of justice. The problem that we have, all human beings, all life nowadays, it's a problem of justice. We won't be able to solve the problem of justice talking about sustainable development. We are not able to solve the problem of justice, only denounce the ecological crisis, without put together the unsustainable development that we live today with social and environmental crisis. I mean, the literature that we have, the environmentalist literature that we have, is focused on ecologist crisis, but don't build the link with the social inequality. In my book, I try to put in the center of the justice like a way to rethink the institutional structure, the model of production. So the way, considering that for me, the crisis that everybody faces in the world, it's a problem that born when we don't recognize rights to the nature, so we fail in the way that we put together justice and sustainability. Maybe the key to solve the problem is to rebuild a new relation between justice and sustainability. This is the reason, because the last chapter is called The New Paradigm. And the new paradigm is the just sustainability paradigm. I mean, it's impossible with the tools that we have together to solve this crisis. So the denounce won't work anymore if we don't build tools founded in another way to think justice.
Giuseppe, to what extent the movements that have emerged when they're committed to environmental justice, capable or in fact able, and let me put it this way, to what extent do they actually have an anti-capitalist agenda? To what extent do they actually challenge the power of international corporations and finance? I raise this because we have witnessed a number of examples of some major environmental organizations getting into bed with corporations, so-called corporate social responsibility. So are there movements which are actually beginning to challenge the power of international corporations and of finance?
I mean, new subjectivities are able to face the capitalistic model only if they are able to draw a new paradigm from which build an ethic focus on a new relation on justice and sustainability, like we say before. I speak of just sustainability paradigm to face the crisis and give answers to change direction. If we develop tools and practices able to guarantee the good living, the buen vivir, the so-called buen vivir of citizen, we would be able to build common sense needed for such radical change. For example, the green economy has been built by the same system that produced the crisis in the first place. If we accept this idea as a possible solution, as some environmental organizations have done, we will not be able to challenge the modern form of capitalism such as the green economy is. If, on the contrary, we oppose to green economy an idea based on the commons, on the creation of safe labor, on the rights of nature, we will be able to convert ecologically the industrial production and energetical system. Only then we will be able to win over the new forms of capitalism and guarantee the best interest of humanity and of all form of life.
I'm talking to Giuseppe Tommaso on his recently published book, Anatomy of a Revolution, published by Castelvecchi in Italy. Lucy, I wonder whether, as the CDCA coordinator, you feel may be important for this book to be translated into English and French.
Yes, sure. For us, it's very important. So far, our organization has developed very well-working networks and collaboration, in particular in Europe and in Latin America. But we are now in a phase in which we need and we really want to develop collaboration, exchange, debate with English-speaking countries and citizens. And we do believe that the perspectives that this book brings in the thought, in the reflection, in the debate, is very important in French and English-speaking country, because the intent of the book is also to bring together a different cultural analysis on the same problem. I mean, in Anatomy of a Revolution, Giuseppe put together American analysis with Latin American analysis with European analysis, and this give also, let's say, the plurality of voices that we need into the analysis. So as CDCA and as ASUD, we really look forward to develop new relation, new friendship and new collaboration, working collaboration, in order to open such debate and use this book as a tool to start working on. I wanted just to invite the listeners to go on our website, which is www.cdca.it. It's a platform where you will find and you can access an international database of environmental conflicts in the world traduced in English. So you've got all the contents into English. And for anyone interested in contacting us, you can write to info@cdca.it.
Just to repeat that, the website is www.cdca.it, and you can get in touch directly by email by writing to info@cdca.org. The Anatomy of a Revolution by Giuseppe Tommaso has been published in Italian by Castelvecchi. Giuseppe, how do people in the Anglophone world, or indeed in the Francophone world, get hold of a copy of your book?
I hope that also in US, in Canada, in Great Britain, we can produce a book for an English speaker.
I hope that will happen very soon. I recommend this book very highly. I think it will raise some very interesting perspectives, and ones which I believe not often taken up within the environmental or indeed the social justice movements around the world. I've been talking to Giuseppe Tommaso, the author of Anatomy of a Revolution. I'd like to thank both of you, Giuseppe Tommaso and Lucy Grell, for joining us on this show. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
I thank you very much. And thank you to everybody who's listening to us, and hope that we can build together the world.